This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
Hello. You are once again listening to Address Unknown. And in this episode, we are going to be talking about our magical time in the country of Turkey.
Ooh, that might be a giant song.
Yep.
Boom, 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 dun, 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 dun.
Please don't sue us.
Constantinople. Boom, 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 boom. Yes, like Janica said, in this episode, we are going to be talking about the couple of weeks that we spent in Turkey. Not nearly enough time, but we were actually needing to pick up the pace a bit so we could not spend as much time there as we had wished.
No.
First year, how are things? What's your temperature nowadays?
Well, I will say that we both probably sound a little bit more husky than we normally do.
We partied last night.
We went out. We're in Hungary.
We're in a lakeside community in Hungary.
Yeah, and we pretended like we were in our early 20s and stayed out until the wee hours of the early morning. So, but I'm feeling good. I'm feeling great, other than a little bit tired. And but yeah, things are good. I'm excited to talk about Turkey.
Yeah. I mean, I've got my lemon tea here with some honey in it. I'm going to not try and sound like a train wreck.
I hope not.
Disregard the amount of edits in this episode.
No, well, they won't know.
Okay. All right. Talking Turkey, specifically Istanbul here. Planning for our international flight, we booked our tickets from Muscat, Oman, to Istanbul using miles that we had earned on our Chase bank credit card. This has been our, sort of our MO here when it comes to booking longer flights, and was always part of our original strategy for this trip. This is kind of how you avoid a lot of large financial pitfalls.
Yeah, for those longer, more expensive flights, right? I mean, we always look to make sure that it makes sense to use miles versus buying them, and this time it did make sense to use the miles.
Arriving after our four-hour flight, we made our way to the Kirikoy neighborhood in Istanbul. Kirikoy is perfectly located. It is hip, it is cool, and it's also a little loud, especially our hotel, which was right next to a mosque. So,
oh, goody.
So just like our past few episodes, you might have heard, we got the 4 a.m. call to prayer every day.
Yeah, great sleep at that hotel. I'm lying, obviously.
We made it through, but all in all honesty, you know, our first impression of Turkey was that it's, we'd call it, I guess, Muslim light.
Yeah.
And this is a respectful term, I think, meaning it's not overly devout like some of the Middle Eastern nations, or so like the Saudi Arabian Peninsula where we had spent time, but it does still have its fair share of mosques and religious people. So this is not to like diminish the Islam religion, but you can tell there's a difference when you get to Turkey. It's sort of this East meets West country. On day one, we were making our way across the Galata Bridge when we noticed all of these fishermen that were there, and they had these fishing lines out, sort of like deep sea fishing rods with multiple hooks on them, and they were catching anchovies.
Yeah.
And this was like very common, we quickly found out, because there was like, it started with like 10 men, and then all of a sudden you saw like 20 more, and the afternoon the whole bridge is full mm-hmm. of these like local fishermen who are just catching anchovies off the river.
And they're all catching, like they pull it up and every single hook is full, and they have like basically what looks like those Costco cheese ball buckets that they just like huck all the anchovies in, and they're full.
We like, thought it was so bait many. When we first looked at it, because it looks like minnows in a bucket, but yes.
Yeah, no, that's, we ate them later and they were very scrumptious, because that time of year, those are the fish that are in season. And then they told us, I don't know, in a few months it switches to some other type of fish, but yeah.
They could have been lying. We just took their word for it. We're like, they will definitely take it. We'll have some anchovies. Yeah, sure.
I think that's true.
Making it over the bridge, we visited the Sultan Ahmet Harki, which houses the tomb of the aforementioned Sultan, who was the great patron of the Blue Mosque. The Blue Mosque, which is well known, is located adjacent to the tombs and dates back to the 1600s. This, along with Turkey's Hagia Sophia, are the two most famous mosques in the country. They are both ornate, full of visitors later in the morning, but totally worth the visit. Mm-hmm. Istanbul is a city of hills, and if you visit, you'll have zero luck avoiding this fact. Be prepared to go up and down a few times, staircases after staircases.
So many steps, so we just can't get away from steps. But, you know, it's good. Our legs are in fantastic shape.
My calves have never been so defined.
I know. Same.
And we realized this very quickly on our first night, because we were heading out to dinner at this great restaurant, Ali. I'm going to butcher this.
We're going to butcher so many of these names, guys. Like, we apologize in advance.
Ali Akabashi, maybe is how it's pronounced. High up on the hill, which we climbed all the steps to go get to, and then overlooking the Bosphorus River in the city. Beautiful place to eat dinner.
Yeah, it was fantastic. It was a stunning, stunning view for a first night dinner.
But we kind of went to sleep right away then after that, because we wanted to get up early, and we had booked a tour.
Not 4 a.m. early, no. But, you know, early.
We wanted to get to the Hagia Sophia Mosque before, like, the tour buses arrived, and before like the crowds were, you know, the kids had gotten up and everybody had breakfast. So we were there maybe, I don't know, 9 o'clock or something, 9:30.
Yeah, pretty early.
It is massive. It is not well maintained.
No.
But it has a wonderful backstory. So the Hagia Sophia Mosque has actually been around since the 17th century, and therefore it's gone through all these changes that occurred through the different rulers that had been there, the Byzantine Empire and the Ottomans, etc. And so what happens is, over time, the mosque was converted to a church at one point in time, then turned back to a mosque, which it is in its current day. And you can tell this because as you go into the mosques now, the ceilings have these exposed mosaics of Jesus and Mary and child, but they're sort of worn away and have not been maintained.
Yeah.
Simply.
Well, they don't care to, because they don't believe in the Jesus.
They don't believe in Jesus anymore, right? There.
But it's historical, so it's still there.
It's odd seeing baby Jesus in a mosque, but it does happen.
Yep.
Walking around Istanbul, you'll find some great shopping, including the Grand Bazaar, which dates back to the 17th century, and today hosts almost 4,000 different vendors.
It's beautiful. It's this beautiful, like,
archways.
X-shaped, like, hallways, basically. There's, like, two main hallways. It's beautiful.
And you can find everything in the bazaar. And I mean that, like, you can find Turkish delights.
So many delights.
Which are
Baklava,
essentially.
Yes,
different
baklava,
types.
And, like, different, like, fig desserts, jelly desserts. Yeah, lots of delights.
Delights. Different types. You get all these different types of exotic spices, and, you know, they're piled up in the big paper bag type things. And you get home goods, you get knockoffs, and there are all kinds of knockoffs.
So many knockoffs, and like really good ones.
But they're, and it's similar
to Asia.
But there's
also really bad ones, I guess, too. Yeah.
Yeah, it's similar to Asia in this way, in that the knockoffs are like all over the place, but the brands, like the name brands differ from Asia because it's more like this like Eastern European slant. Mm-hmm. So like a lot more like football, soccer jerseys and a lot more like Balenciaga.
Yeah. And everybody is wearing them. Like every single person has a Balenciaga t-shirt on, but it's obviously not a real Balenciaga t-shirt because how many people can actually afford that?
I mean, I don't know. The guy in the stall told me it was legit. Yeah. They were legit Gucci sandals.
I know.
But either way, if you're not buying knockoffs, if you're not getting Turkish delights, regardless, it's still a great market to walk through. Super old and just like you feel like you're going back in history.
Mm-hmm.
When in Turkey, people will suggest that you visit the Turkish baths. I enjoyed this experience. Jonica, maybe not so much.
No, I don't know. I had it built up in my head as it was going to be like so amazing and I was going to get this amazing scrub and I would slough off all of the months of sunscreen, right, that had just been built up in my pores. But at the end of the day, it just felt very rushed and very rough. And there are multiple times where I was like, am I going to drown because this woman is just drenching my face with water and not stopping and not caring that I can't breathe.
So aside from your experience, there's lots of choices in Istanbul for the Turkish baths or the traditional hammam. So mm-hmm. I did a little research. This fell on me because Jonica wasn't jazzed about the idea. So I went sort of high, medium, and low in pricing and went mid-range. And we
because they're not cheap.
They're not cheap.
No.
And so we booked a session for each of us at the Kagaloglum hammam. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's right. Maybe not.
Close.
The baths are an ancient tradition going back to the Roman period. So it's, you know, it's good to sort of fall back in history a little bit. I think what you were saying about the rush. So to be clear, we went mid-range. These were $75 a session for each of us.
Yeah.
And it's about 45 minutes or to an hour.
Yeah.
So the baths include like a 15 to 20 minute time in a steam room with a group of the same sex.
Yeah, they bring you into like this locker room area first, right? So there's a man locker room area and there's a woman locker room area and you get your own little private room and you put on your little disposable panties and your towel and you go into the steam room and
you schwitz a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. The idea is to kind of like sweat, right? And loosen up the skin.
Right. So in my case, after I sat for 15 minutes and loosened up the skin.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace.
Last year, I went through many different life changes. I needed to take a pause and examine how I was feeling in the inside to better show up for the ones who need me to be my best version of myself.
When you're navigating life's changes, Talkspace can help. Talkspace is the number one rated online therapy, bringing you professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatry providers that you can access anytime, anywhere.
Living a busy life, navigating a long-distance relationship, becoming a first-step father, Talkspace made all of those journeys possible. I could speak with my therapist in the office. I could speak with my therapist in the comfort of my home. I was never alone.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance, no problem. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
A large man, very hairy and large in my case, came into the room and they call out your name. So then you're like, okay, yep, I'm Mark, I get up. And they like shake your hand very aggressively and they're smiling, they're happy. And then they lead you to the washroom, if you will.
Yeah.
Right. And you talked about wearing sort of undergarments. No, the men, it's just like a wrap around your waist. Like that's all you get.
Yeah, we had like paper underwear, but like literally didn't cover anything. Like it didn't really even make any sense to wear.
So they bring you to the room that's like, there's a lot of other people being washed mm-hmm. in this large marble room. And you sit down on the marble bench. And the handler pouring hot water over you, like scolding at mm-hmm. first. And so it's sort of to like cleanse. Okay, I get it. Then they like grab, he in this case, grab my hand,
mm-hmm.
pulls me over and throws me onto this like large marble slab table.
Mm-hmm.
And other men are being washed on this marble slab table. And that cloth wrap quickly falls to the side somehow, some way. And
you're all just laying around naked.
You're lying there naked, right? Yeah. And again, you're divided by your gender, so it's not that big of a deal. But the clothes are off, and they start exfoliating the body with a kesi, which is a traditional bath glove with like a coarse texture that's been used in Turkish hammams for centuries. And a kesi is, I guess, like basically the way I thought about it, it's like an organic mitted like loofah, like,
yeah,
like the ones that they are like are made out of coral, I guess. Are they made out of coral in the ocean?
No. Well, yeah, sponge.
Like a sponge.
Yeah, a sponge coral. But yeah, and you can get different texture ones, right? Like, because you can get ones that are woven with hemp that are a little bit more rough and aggressive when you want to go that route.
So it does exfoliate. No bullshit here. It scrapes the dead skin cells off your body. And there's, you know, and like a massage, the mitted hand glove sort of goes everywhere except
sure does.
Except to the place unmentionables.
Hmm.
And this process lasts about 15 minutes when after you're again doused with like this scalding hot water, then you're given the bathrobe. And
did they wash your hair?
No.
Oh, see, they washed my hair.
No.
But like, yeah, not in a good way.
It's a little of an aggressive type of bathing,
it's
I will
very
say.
Very aggressive. It's very, there's a lot of pulling you around by your arm. And
yes.
Then, yeah.
But very, very happily, I think, like the people are like, this is their job. Like, they chose this. You didn't have to do this.
Yeah, it's a machine, right? I mean, they're kind of there to get you in and out, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's not a, I like a luxurious, relaxing, slow spa experience.
I wouldn't call this a spa.
No.
Aside from the heat.
Don't think it's going to be a spa. I think maybe that's where I went wrong.
Right. And it's all finished off with a little Turkish tea, mm-hmm. a little Turkish delight, and then some time for your body to like cool down because you've been, you know, in this hot, hot room getting scraped with a mitted kesi, with a mitted kesi glove.
Yeah. So then at the end, you go back into your little room, and I tried to comb my hair, and we were on our way.
Yeah. Just one thing I will interject. Mm. The toiletries were very nice at this hammam.
Yeah, they give you the soap.
Because the toiletries...
Which is nice. It's an olive oil soap, which
that's right.
smelled very good.
Because each one of the hammams has their own branded
yes.
ingredients of toiletries.
Yes.
So they're sort of unique to each space.
Yeah. You get a little bag of soaps and stuff.
Okay, then the next day after our scrub, we continued to explore Istanbul and had an incredible dinner at Karaköy Lokantası.
Mm.
This was an upscale place that offered like different mezze plates of various kinds. And here at this restaurant, against all our ethical animal rights intuition, we tried the calf's brains, which were, the consistency is like similar to pate,
yeah.
but very delicious.
You can tell you're eating brain. Like
it looks
like
a brain. It's a small brain.
I guess for me, I was kind of like, the animal's dead, right? And like a lot of times these sort of areas of the body get discarded, right? And just thrown away. And so I was like, you might as well make the most of, you know, if this thing's dead, you might as well eat as much of it as you can. And so we ate it.
Yeah. And to be honest, it wasn't fucking kebabs again. So we were happy about that because... Well, there's a lot of kebabs in this part of the world.
Lots of kebabs.
No trip to Istanbul is going to be complete without a trip to the Basilica Cisterns, which is a total must-see for anybody, even if you're just there for a day.
So cool.
These are these subground water storage facilities that were built by the Byzantine Empire in the 6th century. They're like this architectural marvel. So you like literally go down like 3 stories, and then there's these arches and columns everywhere, and the whole this container used to be filled with water, and it was a purified drinking system for the town of Istanbul.
Yeah, the whole city.
Because, believe it or not, Istanbul, yes, it sits on the Bosphorus River and is near the ocean. The whole thing is surrounded by brackish water. You cannot drink any of it. So Emperor Constantine, years back, got the idea from the Romans, who had built a cistern on this exact same site previously, and they made channels from like these local rivers high up in the mountains and brought all the water down into the cistern. So today, the water level sits at about 8 inches of depth. There's these metal cantilevered walkways that you can go out, and then the whole thing is like lit up by LED lights inside. So it's not hokey. It's beautiful.
It's really pretty.
It's totally worth going. It's not used anymore for drinking water, obviously.
No, it's massive. It's a tourist attraction, but you get some really cool pics, and yeah, it's just incredibly unique. This is another one that you need to go very early because it gets so busy. Like at one point one day we thought about going, it was later in the afternoon and the queue was wrapped around the block. So we went online, bought early morning tickets and had no problem getting in. And there was not that
many
people, which was super nice.
bookending this visit out, we took a boat ride down the Bosphorus River, which brings you north of the city, and along the way identifies these previously Byzantine and Ottoman Empire like palaces. So you see all these old preserved estates along the river that are now used for, like, you know, weddings or governmental purposes.
Hotels, yeah. Some of them have been turned into, yeah.
Super cool, very well preserved.
Really beautiful.
We finished our final evening with drinks at the Orient Bar. This is a...
Oh, I was so excited.
Hemingway haunt, old haunt.
Anything that has to do... If you tell me that Hemingway went there, you tell me that Fitzgerald went there, like, I'm there. I'm going to go there because I'm just psychotically obsessed with those two men.
It's old.
It's old.
It's fancy.
I had an old fashioned and it was fantastic. It was expensive, so we only had one drink, but there was also really great people watching because it's a very expensive hotel as well. So there were a lot of bougie folks that were also imbibing.
Right. So. It's now the Para Palace Hotel. So we didn't stay, although Jonica felt she deserved it.
I always deserve it.
We just had drinks and we sat in the same bar that Hemingway maybe sat in. And enjoy the dark lighting and velvet red decor.
Yeah, it was great. Okay, that was our short but incredible time in Istanbul. Let's take a real quick break and we'll be right back. Okay, so from Istanbul, we took a quick flight to the, and again, I know I'm not going to say this right, they pronounce it very differently than we do, but the Cappadocia region.
Cappadocia? I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know.
Don't try to correct me when you don't know. Region of Turkey. Specifically, we were going to the town of, again, they pronounce this so differently than we would, but Gurme, and it's not pronounced that way at all in Turkish. But this town is located about a 30-minute drive from the airport, and this region is popular for many things. The first one of them being these cave hotels, which are literally hollowed-out rooms inside the rock formations of this area. We stayed at Gurme Escape Cave Suites, which has been owned and operated by the same family for like four generations. Our room was huge. And although, again, once again, it was crazy hot outside, weird, being in the cave kept our room actually really nice and cool. There was an AC in like the front sitting room.
Yeah.
But not in the bedroom. Not in the bedroom.
You were like deep in this cave.
It was huge. It was very long, a very long room.
And it maintains temperature. It sits sort of at around like, I don't know, 68 degrees all the time.
Yeah, it was very nice. Beautiful room. We had a massive soaking tub, which was really nice after some hikes that we did. So highly recommend. The family is just lovely. Gurme is a small, very touristy town. But kind of the nice thing in a way is that a lot of people come in for just the day to explore and then head out that same evening. So it fills up during the daytime, but at night it really tapers down to just the people that are staying the evening. So first day there, we just walked around town, we grabbed some lunch, we people watched. And then when it was dinner time, we walked up one of the hills, again, just walking up vertically.
It's all an ascent. Yep. This is a trip about ascending.
To take in the sunset. In Gurme, you are surrounded by these super unique rock formations that are nicknamed fairy chimneys, which are tall cone-shaped rocks that are, some of them are white, some of them are kind of orangish, some are pale pink in color, or a mixture of these colors.
Depending upon the sunset, I guess, or sunrise.
Well, in the area that you're in as well, the valley. So there are parts that look super similar to Bryce Canyon in Utah, if you've ever been. So these formations were created by volcanic eruptions. And this created the surreal moonscape starting about 10 million years ago. So the lava flows formed these tough rock, which wind and rain sculpted into sinuous valleys.
It is just the craziest place. Like it looks fake.
Yeah, it doesn't look real. There's, like I said, like the only thing that I can think of that's close to it is Bryce Canyon with the, what were those?
Hodos, with the Hodos. Yes. It looks sort of like a Flintstones kind of movie.
Yeah.
Like it's these conical shaped fairy chimneys, as well as like all the hotels that are built into the cliff face. So you have like, you see lights lit up and all mm-hmm. There's boutique hotels and shit like that, but it's just in a valley in the middle of nowhere in Turkey.
Yeah. And some are big, really big, and some are really small. Some have fallen down.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's super cool and really unique. So the next day we went to explore the Open Air Museum. This name is very deceiving because
museums used pretty loosely.
Yeah. Yeah. So we didn't really know what to expect. I think we've talked about this before, but sometimes I feel very ill prepared when we get somewhere because we're just kind of going. And we write down what we want to do, but I don't think that we look into exactly what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you get ahead and you plan, and then all of a sudden you fall behind because you like aren't doing the plans.
Yeah. So this place is a large area with abandoned churches and monastery cave dwellings carved out during the Middle Ages. So these all used to be painted with these beautiful frescoes, and some of them are still intact, but many have been destroyed by time and people. Turkey, being a Muslim country, Muslim light, as we talked about, the Christians went to this remote place to try to worship in peace without persecution. So again, it's kind of interesting that you're in this Muslim country, but this whole open air museum is actually just abandoned churches and monasteries from the Christians.
Jesus, lots of Jesus frescoes.
Yeah. Some of these are ground level, so you just kind of like duck your head and walk in, but some of them are pretty high up and you have to climb up some very sketchy ladders and steps to reach them. In this museum, air quotes, there is one fully restored church called the Dark Church, but you have to pay an additional fee to get in. And I can't remember exactly how much the ticket was to get into the open air museum, but it was not cheap. It was at least 20 euros a person.
Yeah. And we're like, I'm not paying an extra fee to go into this. No. The church is like really well restored, right? So that's the draw. But
yeah, but you also like, you can't take pictures in any of the churches either, which makes sense because they don't want, there's always that dumb, right? That like they tell you turn off your flash, and there's always the idiots that think their flash is off and it's never off. And so that's why they tell you can't take any photos.
And to be fair, these frescoes are pretty old. So
that's,
you know
what I'm saying.
Mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta be respectful of their wishes there.
So we didn't go into the dark church, but you know, if you go, make that call on your own. That evening, we walked up to Sunset Point to take in another stunning sunset over the beautiful rock formations. The next day, I was super excited because I had booked us a 4-hour horseback ride through the many different valleys and villages in the area. Farber was not so excited.
Nar.
But this was the first time we were getting on a horse this entire trip. So far, we're like literally eight months.
I made it 8 months without having to sit saddle. Yeah,
yep. So because it'd been so long, I was going to get my time in. And this area it's popular to go horseback riding in because it is so beautiful. And it's like a very cool way to cover a lot of ground. So I grew up riding and feel very comfortable on horses. In fact, on a trip to Sedona with Courtney, we got our crystals read, and the man told me that I would own horses one day, and I cried. So
I immediately was like, this guy's full of shit. You were wearing a necklace that has like a horse on it.
I wasn't. There was no reason he should know that I was like a horse girl.
And since that session of the crystal reading, you've been convinced that this mystic in Sedona, Arizona, was like going to guide your, he had a vision of your future.
Yeah.
It just sounded frightening to me and expensive.
Oh my God. Anyway. So they gave me a high energy, easily spooked horse named Sapphire. She was beautiful. In typical fashion, Mark does not remember the name of his horse at all.
None of this stuff means anything.
But it was your horse was very calm, very steady, a little bit older. They always make sure to like put you on a horse that's not going to like freak you out, that you don't have to like overly control. Because you just aren't that comfortable.
They like to give me, you know, sort of
a middle-aged man, like, to ride, because because they know that I'm frightened, yes, and the horse knows I'm frightened,
yes,
and no one wants a bad outcome on these things.
No. So the other interesting thing was, like, our guide was training a super young horse that was just wild. So it was he had his hands full, so he couldn't, like, be helping Farber out all that much either. So our rides always start out kind of slow until they can gauge what Farber can handle. But this ride, I feel like, escalated pretty quickly. And we were full on galloping down many of the sandy straightaways, like, pretty quick. They told me when we started out, the manager comes over to me and kind of whispers, and he's like, I told the guide, like, you could trot at first for a bit. We'll see how he feels. And if he feels okay, we can explore some more.
They talk to me like I'm not there. And I know what's going to happen. I know they're going to see that Jonica is comfortable in these things, and therefore I'll be forced to ride. And I'm not scared for my life. But in this case, these horses had
English saddles.
They had English saddles, which means there's no knob in
there's
the front.
There's no horn.
There's no horn.
Yes.
And that's what you usually grab onto when these things start going. That's how I brace myself. And so these things took off. My horse and Jonica's horse took off. And I'm holding on to the reins. And, like, a shoe is starting to come out of the heel. And I'm starting to...
Oh, the stirrup?
Yeah. And I'm like, oh, my God. I was just like, I hate... It's like Jonica's fear of heights. I have the fear of these animals. And I'm forced to do it every time we go somewhere on vacation.
Well, you know what? I have been forced to confront my fear of heights so many times on this trip so far. And this is the one time that you've been on a horse in 8 months. So deal with it. Anyway, at one point, though, I will say one of my biggest fears while being on a horse came true. We just started out running on this, like, sandy straightaway, and our guide turns around and yells, "Snake!" And sure enough, there was a massive, at least 6 foot long snake right in the middle of the trail. Many horses and myself hate snakes. His horse almost threw him off. Your horse didn't care.
Didn't care. Didn't
just
do a thing.
Just kept going. Yep. Thank God my horse didn't see it. It was pretty much off the trail by the time I got there, because my horse would have freaked out for sure. But we made it through. All of us were a little freaked out after that. But we made it through safely. But this ride was beautiful. Every valley, like I was kind of talking about before, is a different color. And the horses have to make their way up and down these incredibly steep and very narrow trails. Like, they're just one hoof in front of the other. At one point, they had to jump up onto this ledge, and our guide, like, turned around. He's like, okay, they will jump now. And I was like, they're going to jump up this ledge? And they did.
It was about 7 seconds notice.
Yeah. And the horses just did it because they're used to it. But it was incredible. And it was, I will say, probably the most challenging ride that I myself have ever done. So by the end of 4 hours, we were very hot and very sore, but I was very happy. My heart was full. Farber, on the other hand, was so over it. And the manager comes over and asks Mark, how was the ride? And
they think, first of all, they think I booked this. Right, so they are insinuating that I'm the person that loved riding and booked this trip, and so they're like, sir, did you enjoy yourself? And I was like, I fucking hate horses. And he's like, but you know, you booked the 4 hour ride. And I was like, I didn't book any of this. I said I wouldn't book an hour. But yeah, you know, I was a little sore after that time, and my pants had basically ridden up to my hips because I wasn't prepared. And it was the hardest horse riding trail I've ever done. As you said, said it was hard. It was frightening.
Yeah. Yeah. But beautiful. Really beautiful.
He gave us free beers because I was so scared after when I got off the horse.
That's true. Oh my God. I also have to talk about another annoying wannabe influencer thing that happens in Gourmet. So people, mostly young women or couples, will pay a photographer to go with them to the horse ranch. Some might ride the horses, others might just pay to pose with the horses. So these two young women show up with a photographer, full face of makeup on, outfits not fit for horseback riding at all. One girl was wearing a white mini dress to ride a horse. So
they were dressed sort of like they were going to Coachella and not so much to ride the horse.
Yeah, exactly.
Coastal cowgirl.
They were also got like super pissed off. No, that would have been better. At least they would have been wearing like cowboy boots. She was wearing like ballet flats.
Yeah, one of them had heels on.
Yeah. So they're also pissed off because they have to wear a helmet. Like I could not believe this. So I asked the manager, I was like, does this happen a lot? And he was like, yes. And he looks at the girl in the white skirt and he's like, she will be very sore afterwards. And I was like, yeah, no shit. Like, she should not be getting on a horse. So they went out with the photographer walking along beside them. My mind was blown. Anyway, it might be a while before I get on a horse again. Or maybe the next time I do, Farber will just make me go by myself. I guess time will tell.
I won't have a choice in this. I'm going to have to ride again. I've come to that realization. So
another thing that this area is famous for is hot air balloons. I will say, since given my fear of heights, there was absolutely no way that I was going to be getting in one. So we woke up at about 4:30 in the morning to hike back up to Sunset Point to watch all the hot air balloons. The baskets on these balloons are huge. They hold, what, like 20 plus people?
Yeah, I think the max said 16. There was more than 16 people.
Yeah, probably. That's another reason I didn't want to go. And all these balloons go up to see the sunrise. So we walked up there. There had to be over 100 balloons in the sky, and it still was not. It's not high season either. So they said like during the high season, there's like over 200 balloons up there. Like it's just crazy, but it was still incredibly cool to see. Everywhere you look, there's balloons. And so after about an hour, we walked back down and I went to bed. I don't think you could go back to sleep, but I was being a morning person. I was ready to go back to bed.
I was not happy to go to do this hike at 4:30 in the morning. See, it was worth it, but it was
worth it. It was just very early.
It was a tough persuasion to get you up there.
Yeah. We had a chill final day. Woke up early the next morning to fly back to Istanbul. Istanbul has two international airports. So we flew into the newer one that is north of the old town by about 30 minutes. The following day, however, we were going to be flying out of the older terminal that is south of the old town by about 30 minutes. So we hopped on a bus to get to the Radisson Blu, where we were staying that night so that we could be only about a 10-minute drive from the airport we were flying out of. Shockingly, I don't think we expected that much, but this hotel was amazing.
I haven't stayed in a Radisson hotel since like Pee Wee Hockey League, like Northern Minnesota, decades ago.
I mean, the Blues are supposed to be like a nicer echelon of a Radisson. Could have fooled me.
It's a Radisson. I had no clue.
Yeah. But super cool design. And the best part was they had a huge spa with a number of different pools, hot tubs, saunas, light therapy rooms, the like ice machine. So you could go like ice yourself off and cool yourself off before and after you went in the sauna. And you got to use all of this for free if you were staying at the hotel.
We had no clue. We got there and like, and you'll have access to the spa. I'm like, there's a spa here?
Yeah.
And we spent an hour and a half down there. It's great.
Long time. It was amazing. So it was a great end to our incredible trip to Turkey. And like we said at the start, there is so much to see in Turkey. There's so much that we did not get to see. So I have a good feeling that we will be back.
For sure.
Yeah, to visit. It's one of the places that we want to go back to. But we had to get on our way to Italy. We're going to meet up with our friends, the first set of friends, our stateside friends, which was very exciting.
Before we get into our loves and our learns for the country of Turkey, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. All right, Janica, woman of equestrian horsepower, what is your love?
You would think that I would say the horseback ride, right? But I mean, that's like too obvious. That's a given. So I loved the transition of going from, and you talked about this a little bit, going from a very conservative Muslim country like Oman to a very Muslim light country like Turkey. Yes, our hotel was right across the street from a mosque. So like you said, we were still woken up every morning by the call to prayer. And yes, I still had to cover up when visiting very religious sites. But I finally felt once again like more of an equal to you and to men. Almost. I mean, obviously, it's still a very like male dominant country,
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah, I would agree.
And culture, but nothing like we had been experiencing for the last month plus. So I did not get stared at. I blended in a bit more. I loved being able to experience the stark differences of two Muslim countries back to back.
Okay. And what about your learn for Turkey?
I learned that I need something more to eat than kebabs. We ate so many kebabs. Istanbul is an international city, right? Like, it's big.
Right, right.
There are over 15 million people, and it's a very popular tourist destination, and yet it is hard to find food that is not kebabs or a mezze plate. And a note on the mezze plate, right? So, like, everything...
Can you describe this for us?
So, mezze plates, if you don't know, like, they're just little dishes of, like, different dips, if you will. So, sometimes a hummus, sometimes a...
Baba ganoush, like eggplant.
Yes.
Sometimes, like, a yogurt with dill.
Or, like, a chickpea situation.
Or delicious.
Yeah, and most of those are gluten-free. But then they bring you, like, the bread or pita-like thing to eat with it. And so, and I can't eat that. So, then I'm just eating these mezzes with a spoon.
We went to a restaurant in Cappadocia, and the guy comes over and he's ordering, and we were like, well, we don't need any bread because she's gluten-free. He said, oh, don't worry, the mezze plate's gluten-free. And we were like, no, we know. It's dips.
Yeah.
It's essentially dips and sauces.
Yeah.
So he comes over and drops this thing down and then gives us the bread.
Yeah.
And so I'm enjoying this. I'm thinking, this is delicious. And John guy says, with a spoon, just eating each one of them.
Yeah. It's not as good. I don't think
it's like, here's some guacamole and salsa, but you can't eat corn chips. So they go to town with some spoon.
Yeah. And kebabs are kebabs, right?
Hamburger on the grill.
So anyway, Istanbul being a big city, I expected, I guess, to be able to find more diversity in the food. I think I've been craving diversity in the food that we're eating, and it's been hard to come by. And I think coming from New York, I know that we're incredibly spoiled, right? And even Minneapolis has a very large and diverse food scene. And so, I don't know, I was just shocked that it was basically... kebabs and mezze plates. It was really hard to find anything else. And I guess, like, for the U.S., does that have to do with it being the melting pot that it is? And there's so many different cultures and people from all over the world and basically every major city. I don't know. But it's just, it's not a... diversity in food doesn't seem to be a thing a lot of times.
I think that's a fair perspective. Also, not to put down kebabs. They are delicious. They come in many different forms. But... It is the primary food.
I just can't eat that much meat.
It's a lot of
so much meat.
It's a lot of mixed spices in meat and grilled. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, Farber, what is your love, and how many of them should we expect this time?
Istanbul was a very cool city and very welcoming after being in like the strict Muslim countries that we had been in previously, or specifically Oman.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked Cappadocia more.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's a town that people tend to visit and sort of like check off. There, like Jonica mentioned, there's a lot of girls getting the Instagram shot on the horse. There's a lot of like people getting up early and doing the photograph with like the balloons from their patio in the background.
Mm-hmm.
But we were able to stay there a little bit longer. And for like the time we had, it was really calming. It was quiet in the morning. It was very quiet later, like in the middle of the night once the restaurants had closed.
Yep.
And as I said previously, there was nothing like quite like it that I've ever seen before. It's a weird natural phenomenon. It's in the middle of nowhere in the country, meaning you fly there and then you have to drive to get to it. So aside from, you know, the hotels that are there and the homes that are built in, to the caves, it's just like created out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
The streets kind of like meander up and down in the hills, and I love it. I lost myself in the mornings a couple times before you got up and went for a walk. It was just, I really did like it, and it's maybe more emotional than I need to be about it.
I think this is, well, and you've talked about this to me before, where you're like, I don't know if I'm a city person anymore. And that worries me, obviously, for when we go back stateside, because I would say that I loved Istanbul a lot more. And I think like those are, we're starting to diverge.
Our paths are starting to diverge, dude. This is the first sign.
I'm a little bit worried because I could not, like, if you were like, you have to live in either Cappadocia or Istanbul, like, no contest.
This is my love. Okay. So okay. I can love it if I want to. Okay. You don't have to agree.
All right. Anyway, what's your learn?
As we talked, the food is not that diverse. Not going to lie. You can only make a kebab so many ways. There's still sort of a Muslim light vibe in Turkey, both in the towns that we had visited. But mostly this experience affirmed like my terror of riding a horse.
Oh, God.
And I've done it hundreds of times. So don't. This is not like, oh, I'm worried because it was the sixth time riding a horse. It was my 60th probably. And I know you love it. I know everywhere we go in this world, you will ride a horse, regardless of geographic location.
I'll try.
Yeah. And I'll do it. It's still kind of my biggest fear. I would rather go 100 miles an hour on a motorcycle than ride a horse for 4 hours.
You know what? I go snowboarding for you. You can ride a horse for me.
There's no beast between your legs on a snowboard. You fall in the snow.
I could go off the side of a mountain. I'm horrible at snowboarding, but I still do it for you because I know that you love it.
Yep, snow doesn't bite back.
It can. You could hit a tree and die, Sonny Bono style.
Oh, gee. Edit. Yeah. Edit that out.
Come on. All right. Anyway, that's going to do it for episode 23, Turkey. The amazing country of Turkey. Thanks for listening. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, feel free to slide into our DMs on the Insta at @addressunknownworldwide or shoot us an email, addressunknownworldwide@gmail.com. That's it for now. Bye.